sights to show you.
They wanted to skip you from third...
Yeah.
Like, skip over the entirety of fourth?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Well, I had already knew how to read and do all the other stuff.
Well, so for me, I read so well that they wanted to move me from first grade to second grade.
Yeah.
So that's what I did.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah.
And so that's when they moved me up a grade, so.
Yeah, see, I was going to go from third to fifth because I knew language and math. So they were like, shit, okay, he's got it.
Science was my strong suit. Math was never my strong suit.
Math stopped being my strong suit when it got more complicated. You put letters in there.
Once letters got involved.
Yeah, once letters got involved. I'm like, no. These are all numbers. Fuck this. I don't want variables.
I remember sixth grade, they introduced algebra, and then I was like, fuck.
Yeah, that kind of fucked me also.
Yeah.
But whatever. You know what? I still look young. I'm good.
It's
almost
true.
Almost like a vampire, huh?
Almost like
just ageless,
I was
huh?
Like, I need to find a segue. But Anthony always coming in clutch with the segue.
I only made that reference because I have been called a vampire continuously from people.
Oh, well, because you're like relatively ageless? Yeah.
Yeah, mostly from people I've dated.
Really?
Yeah. They're like, oh, you freaking vampire. I'm like, I'll take it.
Yeah, it's because
you're the one that swiped. Fucking pervert.
I don't know. These vampires are pretty sexy in this movie.
Right? I don't shimmer, though. I'm just a sweaty Mexican. That's just sweat. That's
glistening. I'm glistening in the sunlight.
Oh, boy.
Let's just go ahead and get started. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, finally, in studio, a.k.a. my dining room table...
Ooh.
Anthony Fuentes.
Yep, I haven't seen this table in a long time, and getting those mic settings was a bit of a chore, but we got it.
It took 3 seconds.
Yeah, but I had to gauge. I had to go just click back to the innate screenshots that I have in my brain.
Right. Well, today, welcome to February, first of all.
Oh, yeah, what is February?
February.
It's the intro episode. We got to let them know.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
Come on, Alex.
We are doing another Versus Month, which we have not done since July of 2019.
Oh, shit.
We are doing Vampires versus Ghosts.
That's right.
And to kick it off, we are also going back to an old format. We are not only doing a versus within the versus.
Yes.
Vampires versus ghosts, and within that, we're doing Fright Night, 1985 versus 2011.
That's right, remake versus OG. We're giving you all we can in what has traditionally been our least listened to month, so you know what? Fuck it.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
But it's
every
okay.
February, I'm like, let's do this, let's do that. It's never worked.
Let's get real ambitious before people start listening again in March. Yes. But at the same time, February episodes have great legs. They always come back. So you know what? It's good because I think some of our best content does come out in February. So here we go.
Yeah, like our Crimson Peak episode.
Oh, god damn it. Most of the time, some of our best content.
No, The Hunger. I think we just did like a straight up vampire. No, we didn't. We did just like a love month.
Yeah, love month.
Yeah, and that's when we did The Hunger. We did Crimson Peak. We did, yeah. That was a good month.
That was a good one. Yeah, love month was fun. But that's, you know, love is involved with vampires as well.
Oh, yeah. Vampires are erotic. So to kick off Vampires versus Ghosts month, yeah, we're talking about Fright Night from 1985 versus 2011. And, of course, where would we be without good old IMDb telling us what this movie is about? I just picked one because they were essentially the same plot because these are the same movie, just, you know, many years apart.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. There are some definite differences, but, like, the fundamentals are there.
Absolutely. Yeah. So a teenager discovers that the newcomer in his neighborhood is a vampire. So he turns to an actor in a television horror show for help dealing with the undead.
Yes. And see, there are variances around that, but that's the through line.
Yeah.
The through line is there.
Yeah, that's the IMDb synopsis for the 1985 version because I liked that one better. So I picked that one.
Interesting. I thought they were both pretty neck and neck almost.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
We'll get it out.
Yeah. So first, we're going to go through the 1985 credits. This was, of course, directed by Tom Holland. Not that Tom Holland.
Obviously, we say this every time, but...
Well, this is his directorial debut. Yes. So he was a former screenwriter, and this was his, like, I want to make this happen. And so he did. And it was also written by Tom Holland, and it was produced by Herb Jaffe, who's a relatively well-known independent producer. He is also the grandfather of a voice actor that I follow.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty badass. All right. Oh, what did Tom Holland do, by the way, that made him so famous?
We talked about it.
It's Child's Play.
It's Child's
Chucky.
Play.
He's responsible for Chucky with Don Mancini.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, I know this because I researched the episode, but it's totally escaping me right now. COVID!
Oh, goddamn.
I think Chris Sarandon also worked on Child's Play, yeah?
Yes, he was. He's the cop.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes, yes. Speaking of Chris Sarandon, this movie is starring Chris Sarandon.
Oh, boy.
And is it starring Chris Sarandon? William Ragsdale, Amanda Bierce of Married with Children fame. Stephen Gott...
that is her!
Yes, it is.
Oh, shit. Fucking Marcy. Wow.
Stephen Geoffreys and Roddy McDowell.
Roddy McDowell's in this? Oh, was he?
He's the actor.
The actor, right? Yeah. Okay, yeah. I was like, oh, that is him too. Shit. Shit. All right.
There you go. This movie released on August 2nd, 1985. It was budgeted at $9.25 million. They gave me a sliding scale. I'm just going with the more expensive one because it always is the more
it's
expensive
always,
one.
Yeah, exactly.
And it made $24.9 million.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, especially.
That's pretty goddamn good.
Yeah, especially once we get into, there was pretty much no oversight.
Huh.
Like.
It's an indie film.
Pretty much they were just like, go have fun, make your fucking movie.
Yeah.
I don't think any executives showed up on set at all during the making of this movie.
Tom Holland's like, this for all the movies, right?
No. No. Meanwhile, in 2011, the 2011 Fright Night was directed by Craig Gillespie. The screenplay was by Marty Noxon of Buffy the Vampire Slayer fame.
Okay.
The story, of course, by Tom Holland and was produced by Michael DeLuca and Allison Roswig.
Rosenwig.
The cast.
Oh, great cast.
Let's get into this
great
fucking cast. We have Anton Yelchin.
Yeah, the boy.
The boy. This is turning into an Anton Yelchin season.
I'm to honor our boy. He's
or year at least, because we've covered two movies that he's starred in.
We do Green Room, and what was the other one?
This one,
that's right. Yeah, yeah. I thought you meant two prior to this. I'm like, whoa, hold on a second.
No. And then I have a couple others that he's been in that I would love to cover.
All right, season of Yelchin, let's go.
Colin Farrell.
That's right.
Yes.
Who actually, I think, a good successor to Chris Sarandon for sure.
Yeah.
Like, that makes sense casting-wise.
It makes sense if you, like, look at what was, like, aesthetically conventionally attractive in 1985 versus 2011. Like, mm-hmm. Colin Farrell is, like, a fucking specimen. Like, and then in 1985, they're like, oh, Chris Sarandon, he's sexy. Like, we gotta,
see?
You know.
Yeah, it only would have been better and he'd been more of a specimen if he was his penguin version. That's it.
Oh my god.
That'd be great. Same accent and everything. That'd be fantastic.
I actually haven't seen any of like the bits of him as Penguin yet.
Oh, he'd be a bitchin' vampire for sure.
I'm excited. No. Colin Farrell in 2011. He was pretty untouchable. Christopher Mintz-Plasse.
Oh, fucking McLovin himself.
McLovin himself.
Yep.
David Tennant. David Tennant fame.
Yeah. What would he say? He's Doctor Who and Barty Crouch. That's how I remember him.
Okay, yes. He is the 10th Doctor.
That's right.
He's not Doctor Who.
Whatever. Mr. Who.
God, as someone who was formerly obsessed with Doctor Who, you're killing me.
Senor Who?
Mr. Doctor?
El Doctor. There you go. Okay. El Doctor.
El Doctor. David Tennant is amazing. It's also in Good Omens, which is amazing if you haven't checked that out.
And Jessica Jones as
villain. Yes, as Kilgrave. Amazing. Ugh. Yes, I love David Tennant. So
fantastic.
Imogen Poots once again making her reappearance.
Wait, what was she in? I can't remember.
She's also in Green Room.
Oh shit, that's right. Yes.
Wow.
Imogen Poots.
Yeah.
And I remember the name, I didn't remember the face.
And then the woman, the myth, the legend, Toni Collette.
Oh, dude, she was... We've had Toni Collette this season, too, with Krampus.
With Krampus, and then we also did Hereditary in October.
No, that was March last year.
Oh, I thought it was October for some reason.
No.
March of last year.
Yes.
But we've covered a few Toni Collette films.
Yes, that's right. Well, this has been the Collette cast for a couple weeks here on the Horror Movies Podcast.
This bad boy came out August 19th, 2011 in the United States. It was budgeted at $30 million.
Shit. I mean, it looks expensive.
It was also made in 3D, so.
Yeah,
which you can tell.
Yeah, there's some shots in there for sure that are just like, hey, look at this.
Or it's just like, oh, this is flying in your face. And I'm like, great, wonderful, thank you. And its box office was $41 million.
Yeah, I think this is around when people are starting to say, fuck 3D. Around that time.
I can see that, 2011-ish.
Because, I mean, Avengers came out in 2012, and we tried our hardest to find non-3D screenings.
Jesus, really?
Yeah. Yeah, that was the good old college days. But yeah, because at that point, everybody was just like, fuck it. Blah, 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 blah. But I mean, you know, obviously, these are both pretty interesting, and they're different, but same. It's weird. They're emblematic of their era, I would say, for sure, each of them. But I'm going to start off today with good old 1985. So shall we do this?
Absolutely. Let's dive right in.
All right, let's go. In our first vampire episode. And then we'll see how they compare against the ghost next week. So.
Yes.
So now, while writing the script for Cloak and Dagger, Tom Holland amused himself when he conceived the idea of a horror movie fan becoming convinced that his next-door neighbor was a vampire. But he did not initially think this premise was enough to sustain a full-length story. What's it going to do? Tom Holland asked. Quote, because everybody's going to think he's mad.
There's so many quotes from Tom Holland in this, and I think it's because there's a documentary on Fright Night.
That makes sense.
I haven't watched, and I haven't seen it, but I'm going to suggest everyone watch it.
Yes, of course, to learn the fundamentals here.
Yeah.
But of course, the story percolated in his mind for a year, and finally, one day, while discussing it with John Byers, then the head of story department at Columbia Pictures, he finally figured out what the boy would do. And of quote, of course, he's gonna go to Vincent Price, which, yeah.
At the time, it tracks.
Yeah, the host definitely gives off the vibes for sure.
Mm-hmm. And this one for sure.
Mm-hmm. In that era, many local TV stations in the good old US of A had horror hosts such as, was it Zach Girl?
Zachary? I don't know. This is straight from Wikipedia.
Svengoolie, yes. And the nationally syndicated Elvira.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's right, the girl. So.
Known lesbian.
Known goat. So Holland decided it would be natural for the boy to seek aid from this local host, obviously. So on this he says, the minute I had Peter Vincent, I had the story. Charlie Brewster was the engine, but Peter Vincent was the heart. Now, of course, once he'd conceived that character, Holland kicked out the first draft of the script in 3 goddamn weeks. Fucking fast. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So on this, he says, and I was laughing the entire time, literally on the floor, kicking my feet in the air in hysterics. Like, ha, 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 ha.
I just imagined him on his back, kicking his feet in the air. Like, just, it just sounds really funny.
It's like, oh, man, she's going to have sex for the first time. He's going to be a fucking idiot. Because he was a fucking jackass. Oh, I hate that character. Anyways.
Charlie?
I fucking hate Charlie. I hate Charlie. Oh, so much. The Peter Vincent character was named after horror icons Peter Cushing and Vincent Price, obviously. And of course, Holland specifically wrote the part for Price. But at this point in his career, Price had been so badly typecast that he had stopped accepting roles in any horror movies. And he obviously turned his ass down, as was the style at the time. So, the head of Columbia Pictures then suggested Roddy McDowall for the part. Now, thankfully, Tom Holland worked with McDowall in a previous film and was all for the idea, as, of course, Vincent Price said fuck all of this out loud to his face. So when it came
to... I imagine he sent like a fuck you letter in just like beautiful calligraphy.
Oh my gosh, yeah, absolutely.
It was delivered by a raven.
Mm-hmm. But like, he's like, there was supposed to be a Polaroid with him just flipping right. off, but the raven, it's getting kind
of
old.
The raven thing just reminded me of What We Do in the Shadows. We send oh, yeah. ravens. just respond to the ravens.
By the way, listeners, Alex, I finally got her on it.
Yeah.
Finally no, got her
I've,
on it.
I've watched... Yeah, pretty much all of season two, part a good chunk of season three. Well, actually an episode of season three. But
what season three? They're all good. They're I'm all
going
good
to, Once I sit down and start good. Watching it, I'm not going to stop watching it. I'm going to finish it this
week. It's hard to put down, isn't it?
It's, well, because the episodes are so short. They're so easy to watch.
And they move on to the next one so well.
Yeah.
Listeners, if you've not seen What We Do in the Shadows, the TV show, fantastic.
And considering that I'm like a diehard What We Do in the Shadows movie fan, yeah.
And I haven't seen it, so, but... One day.
That'll be fun.
When it came time to cast Jerry the Vampire, Chris Sarandon didn't think he had the chops to act in a horror film. Plus, he was more than a little suspicious about working with a first-time director. Fucking, ay, ay, ay.
I mean, there's some red flags there.
Yeah, there definitely is. So, he flew to Los Angeles to meet Tom Holland and producer Herb Jaffe. Holland and he had an immediate rapport and went on to make several more films together. Obviously, good old child's play. And Sarandon was awed that Holland had the film so completely mapped out that he, quote, literally described the movie shot by shot all the way through, page by page, scene by scene. It was basically the way he shot it. Because, I mean, first-time director, if they're that visionary, you know... They're going to make it work.
Yeah.
They're going to make it work.
Or at least worth a shot, you know?
Yeah. And based on his podcast and our coverage of his films and even stuff he's written, Tom Holland's pretty goddamn good, I would say. Yeah. So casting director Jackie Birch was a busy, busy bee. William Ragsdale had auditioned to portray Rocky Dennis in Mask, but he lost the role to Eric Stoltz. Oh, Eric Stoltz. Jackie remembered his audition, though, and thought he would be... right to portray Charlie Brewster. Now, Ragsdale auditioned several times and ultimately received the news that he had indeed landed the part on Halloween night of 1984, beating out several other future stars like Charlie Sheen.
Can you imagine if Charlie Sheen had been in this movie instead? It probably would have made me hate make me not like Charlie even more.
I don't think him and Chris Sarandon would be good. Like, as a duo. No, they don't match. Like, you need a really, really pathetic Charlie to make that kind of work.
You really don't like Charlie Brewster.
Yeah, and I think Charlie Sheen is pathetic as a human, but in 85, he's kind of hot shit.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He kind of has, like, that, like, untouchable, like...
yeah.
You know, like, everyone's seen him in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah, like... no, he just wouldn't work. So, the same thing could be said, of course, with Stephen Joffrey's. Who had a less than stellar audition for Anthony Michael Hall's character in Weird Science. But of course, he still managed to endear himself somewhat to Jackie Birch. She suggested him for Fright Night. Unfortunately, this is where the miscommunication starts. Now, of course, Jeffries loved the script. So he calls his agent... and empathetically declared that he would love to audition for Charlie Brewster. Quote, "No, Steve," his agent replied. "You're wanted for the part of Evil Ed."
Yikes.
Joffrey's was simultaneously baffled and heartbroken. Quote, "What do they see in me that they think I should be this?" Well, anyways, it worked out.
poor man.
I know. He's just like, fuck, but money.
Right.
But money.
Right. So once his cast was in place, Holland got input from each of the actors and made numerous revisions to the script based on their input. Some were slight and others were major, such as the ending, which originally featured Peter Vincent transforming into a vampire as he returned to host Fright Night.
That would have been interesting.
I would have liked that.
Yeah, that kind of seems tonally in line, actually.
I think it would have been fun.
Yeah.
The September 6th, 1984 draft of the screenplay, which is circulating online, is very close to the final cut of the film, but a few more changes were still to come. Obviously, it's not the final version, but I do want to find it.
Yeah, no, that'd be cool.
Sarandon's edits were in the form of him doing research into bats, and he discovered that most of the world's bat populations were frugivores, so he concluded... Jerry had a lot of fruit bat in his DNA. This explains why the character is frequently munching on apples.
Oh, that So cool.
Which Sarandon decided his character was using to, quote, cleanse his palate after draining blood from his victims.
That's just a great detail.
I love, because I was thinking that. I was like, why is he so upset? Why does he like fruit so much?
Oh, I was thinking that too. That's awesome. That's a great detail, actually.
I think it's really neat.
Wow.
Yeah. McDowell also did a lot of work on his character and made a conscious decision to pattern his performance after the Cowardly Lion in The Wizard of Oz, which you can totally see.
Wow, I'm glad I didn't, like, read this before, because these are all very revelatory, for sure.
McDowell commented to Fangoria on his character, quote, he's got such a sad life. He's sort of cowardly, and then he finds his strength as a human being, unquote.
He finds his courage.
No. At the time of production, Fright Night was Columbia's lowest budgeted film, and they did not have high expectations for it. So they were focusing all of their attention on the John Travolta, Jamie Lee Curtis film Perfect, which they were certain was going to be a blockbuster.
Never heard of this movie in my life.
No, me either. quote, they never even came to set, Tom Holland said. Quote, I was left alone. I was totally my, it was totally my film without studio interference, unquote.
That's so interesting, because, like, this film very artfully does the trope, so I'm like, oh, wow. So he actually managed to put some creativity in this bitch without oversight.
I mean, he's a fan.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah, you can tell. Like, I think there's a lot of, like, horror history in this film that kind of culminates for sure.
Definitely. Generally speaking, filming went off without a hitch, but would this be a horror film without a few mishaps?
No. Remember, lowest budget at Columbia at the time. There's gonna be some slippages.
Right. So on Christmas Eve, during the shooting of a scene where, what's the character who played Charlie Brewster? Charlie Brewster, that guy, Ragsdale. Mm-hmm. Is that his name?
Yeah, Ragsdale.
Where he's running down a staircase, Ragsdale accidentally tripped and broke his ankle, resulting in the film being temporarily put on a hold until he could recover. Rod Martin, a trainer for the Los Angeles Raiders, came in to wrap his foot every day for him, and the shooting schedule was rearranged to put off action sequences until it mended.
Okay, I love this idea. He's like, hey, kid, don't ever be a running back. You got bitch ankles.
Weak ankles. So this is a fun little tidbit. Many scenes were shot with his foot in a cast, including the scene which Jerry comes into Charlie's room to attack him.
Oh, boy.
In shots where Charlie's feet were visible, the costumer slit Ragsdale's shoes in several places and slipped them on and covered the portions of the white cast that peeked through with, like, little parts of black cloth.
Hey, time's money. Time's fucking money
they
right there.
They made it work, but, like, literally, I kind of want to watch this now and see how little we actually see, like, his ankles and, like, below. Like, it's just, like, we just don't see his feet.
I love it. I love the stunt coordinator, like, toss Ragsdale like a goddamn rag doll. Just fucking do it.
I love it. So the schedule had to be reorganized, but filming did continue. Quote, nobody panicked. In fact, I think the thing that I'll remember most about this movie is everyone's spirit and humor, unquote, said Ragsdale. Now we get to talk about special effects, my personal favorite.
There are some great ones in this one.
So obviously this is going to turn into a tried and true practical versus CGI conversation, because 1985's Fright Night is all practical.
Yeah.
2011 is all CGI.
It is. But I will also, we'll get to it. No, let's keep going.
So when it came to special effects, Richard Edlund was the head of visual effects, and his team had just completed work on Ghostbusters.
That's right.
Which worked to his advantage on Fright Night, saying, quote, they had made all their mistakes with how to do matte shots and everything on Ghostbusters with their huge budget, said Holland. Quote, so they really knew how to do the special effects as inexpensively and efficiently as it could be done at the time, unquote.
Oh, that is brilliant.
I love this.
A lot working for them. I like it.
Yes. The most excruciating part of the makeup process for the cast were the contact lenses, because this is 1985.
Yeep.
In those days, the lenses were hard plastic, which Steve Johnson hand-painted and throwing some glitter into the mix, lacquered and sanded himself. And then put them into someone's eyes. The cast could only wear them for a maximum of 20 minutes because they were virtually blind in them, and they were thick and painful and dried out their eyes.
We've seen this song and dance so many times. If it was Sam Raimi, they would have that on for 3 hours at least.
Well, you know, one of the cast members put them on for 40 minutes and had scratches on their eyes for... like, months afterwards.
Oof.
So, like, 20 minutes was, like, a hard limit. Like, you gotta get them off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, for the transformation sequences, up to 8 hours were needed to prepare Sarandon's makeup. Sarandon was uncomfortable spending that long sitting in a chair doing nothing, and since he had experience doing his own makeup for his work on the stage and theater, he volunteered to help. Which, again, I love.
I actually heard this detail before. I found it very fascinating.
Yes.
Chris Sarandon, as much as he plays, like, weirdos and, like, bastards and tough guys, he seems like the nicest dude.
He seems very, very sweet.
Yeah, he's like a theater guy.
I don't think it made it into the outline because they're literally far too much information. Yeah. But he, basically at a panel, of a reunion panel for the 1985 Fright Night, someone mm-hmm. asked about the 2011 Fright Night, and they basically all started talking shit about it. Mm-hmm. And Chris Sarandon defended it.
Oh, nice.
Like,
good on him.
He kind of was just like, okay, let's just direct it back to the actual Fright Night.
Like,
it was, yeah, he seems really nice.
Yeah, he really, really does. That's yeah. awesome.
So, he did some of the stippling while the makeup men were applying prosthetics to his face and head, and he even worked on his own finger extensions.
Yeah, that's the detail I read, that while they were working on everything, he was like, okay, I'm gonna do this.
I love it. Carl! Co-star Ragsdale recalled one instance when Sarandon spent an entire day in the makeup chair. And when he was finally fully transformed into the monster, a producer informed him that they were not going to be able to shoot the scene that day. Quote, and Chris said, okay, and turned around and went in and took it off. It was amazing. Ragsdale exclaimed, quote, I would have gone through the roof, but he didn't. He had, his will had been broken by that point, unquote. I would have gone fucking ballistic.
I don't even know. Like, at that, like, this is, that's weird, because he can tell he's just like, fuck it. Like, fuck it.
Okay, like...
But if this happens again...
Right.
I am gonna legitimately bite your necks. Okay, now, I know we have to get to the 2011 film at some point, but let's get this release and reception knocked the fuck out right here.
Hell yeah.
So, Fright Night's widest release was actually in 1,545 theaters. I did it.
Right? You did? Yeah, there's more coming up.
Jesus. The film made... $6,118,543 on its opening weekend.
Woo!
Woo! And of course, this, God damn it. why is there less than the, what's the opening? I don't get that.
It's widest release, because basically it's opening. Yeah. You can skip that. It's fine.
I gotcha. That sentence, we'll end it right there. So the domestic gross came out to $24,922,237. I'm doing it!
Woo!
See, when we're in person, it's a lot easier. It performed the best of any horror film released during the summer of 1985 and was the second highest grossing horror film of good old 85, surpassed only by A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge. And we'll talk more about that one later on at some point, because we only did one Freddy.
Yeah.
Anyways, Fright Night garnered critical acclaim, holding a 92% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes, with the average rating being a 7.35 out of 10 based on 36 reviews, which everything review is a 6 point something. That's actually very goddamn good.
Yeah.
The site's consensus reads, Fright Night definitely combines thrills and humor in this ghostly tale about a man living next to a vampire. Roger Ebert gave the film 3 stars out of 4 and wrote, Fright Night is not a distinguished movie, but it has a lot of fun being undistinguished. And yes, I think a wonderful summation right there.
Yes.
Variety praised Sarandon's performance, writing that he, quote, is terrific as the vampire, quite affable and debonair, until his fingernails start to grow and his eyes get that glow, of course, because that is creepy.
We love a rhyme.
Yeah. Some people didn't like this film, but we don't give a shit what they actually have to say, because they're goddamn wrong.
Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah, I agree.
There's dissenting opinions. Just know that they're out there, but yeah. I'm not going to give them a platform, because I don't give a fuck.
And, you know, 85... Not all of them are around. It's fine. So, Letterboxd. It's time for Letterboxd. Let's go. 1985 Fright Night has an average of a 3.6 rating out of over 40,000 reviews, certifying it as a kind of a banger.
Yes.
Kind of a banger amongst the fans. Amaya with 3 stars. Quote, horror movie characters are so damn horny, just stop and none of this would happen.
It's true.
Deathbolt was 4 stars. Jerry Dandridge is way too fucking cool. I mean, he is. Felipe Fritz says with 3.5 stars, quote, "This movie is fucking silly and I really enjoy it. I felt that the third act was kind of slow, but the rest of the movie is extremely entertaining, mostly thanks to Chris Sarandon's performance. I also love the look of the vampires. The effects are still great." Which, they really, really hold up. They really hold up.
Definitely.
But now's the time, Ms.
Let's
Webster.
Let's talk about 2011.
just generally, because it was a pretty good year for me, actually.
Was it?
Yeah.
I was a junior in high school. Actually, that was the best year of high school for me.
I was a junior in college.
There you go.
Yeah, great time.
Anyway, no, let's talk about Fright Night 2011.
Oh, fine.
In May of 2009, DreamWorks first announced that it would be overseeing a remake of Fright Night, which, of course, came to fruition and was released in 2011 with the same title. Fright Night. The script, penned by Buffy the Vampire Slayer alumna Marty Noxon, loosely followed the plot of the original film. Charlie, played by Anton Yelchin, and his mother, Toni Collette, are transplanted from Corvallis, Iowa, to a Las Vegas suburb.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, the Vegas part is a very interesting little tweak to this that I was like, oh, it's Vegas.
Yeah.
Amy, played by Imogen Poots, is feistier and sexually aggressive. Evil Ed, played, of course, by Christopher Mintz-Plasse, has endured a falling out with Charlie prior to the start of the film. Peter Vincent, played by David Tennant, is a horror magician modeled after Chris Angel.
2011, baby, yeah!
And Billy Cole's character was completely omitted, and Jerry Dandridge, played by Colin Farrell, is no longer the lovelorn vampire. He was described by Evil Ed as the fucking shark or the shark from Jaws, and has different intentions for his victims.
Honestly, works with Colin Farrell. Considering how much of an action guy he had been to that point.
He was more on the action side of things at this point. Well, yeah, and he just didn't really have, like... Although he could do, like, the eyebrow thing where he just looked like a kicked puppy.
Yeah, no, he can play, I think, the Sarandon intentions, but honestly, like...
He's too ripped.
Him being a shark, like, he plays a good fucking shark.
Yeah, when he goes into the backyard and just, like, pulls up their freaking gas line, I was like, oh my god.
Oh.
Anyway... Chris Sarandon was offered a role in the 2011 remake and chose to pass on the torch by doing a cameo as a man who was eaten by Jerry Dandridge, which I fucking love. Sarandon pointed out, quote, "It's not the original, and they didn't set out to make the original," unquote. But the cast and the crew of the remake, quote, "were all huge fans."
I mean, that's how you gotta do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how you gotta do it, because it is different. It's definitely different.
Definitely. Colin Farrell had watched the film countless times during his youth and publicly stated, quote, "I heard they were remaking Fright Night and went, oh god, a remake. Hollywood's so dull. And I read the script and I really hoped I didn't like it, and I did." So, this is really funny. So, Sarandon, when he first met Farrell, because Farrell's a huge fucking fanboy, said, quote, "He walked in and he literally was almost shaking. He was so excited at the prospect of meeting his childhood idol. He gave me a beautiful bottle of wine and a DVD set of the Carl Dreyer Vampire. It was a really graceful and wonderful introduction."
Oh, man.
That makes me so happy.
I love that they're like... They cast these, like, bastard vampires, but, like, the actors themselves are good guys. They're just good guys.
Yeah. Colin Farrell has been through some shit, though.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
As, he's, like, a bad guy kind of shit?
No. Like, I just think that because he kind of tends to play slime balls, like, people kind of, like, think he's a slime ball.
Oh, yeah, and he's totally,
like,
not.
No, because people have, like, he has, like, a sex tape that, like, someone, like, an ex has, like, threatened to leak multiple times that he's had to, like, take to court. He has, like, a stalker. Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time on his Wikipedia page.
I mean, he's a desirable man. That's
I mean,
that's
I get it, but, like, I'm also not in, like, I'm going to leak your sex tape, but...
Yeah, people are flex, though. I mean, God.
Anyway. So, it just, I he seems delightful, but anyway.
Yeah.
Steven Spielberg provided a great deal of input in the making of the film, such as storyboarding the scenes and also assisting with the editing, which I didn't know.
I mean, DreamWorks.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, DreamWorks, that makes sense.
I mean, it makes sense, but I didn't know. When asked his thoughts in 2015, creator Tom Holland replied, quote, Kudos to them on every level for their professionalism, but they forgot the humor and the heart. They should have called it something other than Fright Night because it had no more than a passing resemblance to the original. What they did to Jerry Dandridge and Peter Vincent was criminal. Smiling, he added, outside of that, it was wonderful.
That's an interesting take.
He tried to be complimentary.
Well, ultimately, it's his debut, directorial debut. It has such a sacred thing to him. I imagine he's just like, he could have done it this way, he could have done it this way, he could have done it this way, but like...
I mean, it's his baby.
It is his baby, absolutely. But at the same time, I think they really had to make these characters vastly different. Otherwise, it's just going to be a retread. And it doesn't feel like a retread to me, really.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't want to do a shot-for-shot remake.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Those are dumb. Those are dumb. Anyways, Fright Night opened in number 6 at the box office. Oh, boy. I remember following this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did. I was kind of rooting for it, but I also didn't go out of my way to watch it, so I was kind of a jackass about it.
Were you in your edgelord phase at this point?
No. I just didn't. I think I was still broke. And in college, so yeah. Oh, no, I was about to go to college. I was like ready to go, actually.
Oh, so you were really broke.
yeah, really broke. So the film grossed $7,714,388 in its opening weekend.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. And finished with a domestic grossing of $18,302,607. And of course, around $22,700,000 in other countries, giving a worldwide total of, I'm going to do it, Alex, I'm going to do it right now, $41,002,607 against a $30 million budget. Bam.
Wow.
Bam. Look at me reading numbers.
Kudos. Good job.
The only one I fucked up on was $22 million. Anyways, Rotten Tomatoes gave the film, of course, an approval rating of 72% based on a lot more than the first one, 178 reviews. So, holy shit.
Yeah.
And, of course, an average rating of 6.28 out of 10, which, yeah, it makes sense. But, I mean... That's hard to compare those numbers. That's a lot of reviews. Anyways, the site's critical consensus reads, it may have not been necessary to remake the 1985 cult classic, but the new Fright Night benefits from terrific performances by Colin Farrell and David Tennant. And it's smart, funny, and stylishly gory to boot. So, of course, Robert Kohler of Variety writes, Fright Night has, quote, a cleverly balanced mix of scares and laughs. Now, interestingly enough, Roger Ebert also reviewed this, probably one of his last reviews as well, also giving it 3 stars, ending his review with, as vampire movies go, Fright Night is a pretty good one.
I think he was just like at the end of his life and was just like, you get 3 stars, you get 3 stars. Because I was thinking about it, I'm like, did he review this? I don't know if he did. Like, I was like, it must have been like one of his last reviews.
I mean... No, I followed his reviews. He was still sharp to the end.
He was
honest. I think he actually stopped giving a fuck in certain ways, but I think if it was fun, he was like, you know what?
It was fun.
Why am I bitching?
But also he said the same thing about Fright Night in 1985.
Yeah.
So. But no, I was actually pleasantly surprised because I was like, if he had seen this, he probably didn't like it. And then I was like, oh, turns out he did. So,
yeah.
Pleasantly surprised.
Right, I agree. Of course, meanwhile in Letterboxd, because we got to come back, Fright Night 2011 has a solid 3 rating out of 34,000 reviews that are all...
Like, it's a terminally online joke. They're all down horrendously for fucking Vampire Colin Farrell.
Oh, I see. Down horrendously. I'm like, oh, you know I'm not hip, Alex.
No. Because I was anticipating me saying this, not you.
I thought there was another bit. I was hoping you'd get this bit. But anyways, of course, they are all also very sad about Anton Yelchin, which I am too.
Yeah.
So... Rene Fournier?
Yeah.
Boy, that's a good name. With 3 stars. Quote, Vampire Colin Farrell, smack snack. Come get all the juice. Oh, that's great. 3 stars from Harlequinabe? 3 stars from Harlequinabe. Let's just call him that.
I don't know. It's just a weird font, and it's from Letterboxd. I don't know.
I mean, it looks good on the outline, though. So, Colin Farrell... Wants to drink Imogen Poots' blood and make her his vampire companion. Imogen Poots runs away from him. Me, disgusted and outraged. This bitch is fucking crazy. Oh, that's funny. Danny with 3 stars. Quote, I'd fucking pay Colin Farrell to fuck me and then kill me, end quote.
I'm I'm so glad
there's
you
a lot of thirst.
I told you, like, okay, literally, yes, continue.
Okay, let's keep going.
No, keep going, because I have a little aside that I'm going to get to.
Oh, wonderful. User, former movie enjoyer with 4 stars, great name, says, quote, if sexy vampire Colin Farrell wanted to turn my girlfriend into sexy vampire queen, I would simply let him, out of respect. But I would spend the rest of my life in a cloud of jealousy. What does she have that I don't?
So this is the aside. I'm going to steal your thunder. I just want to say, these are just the reviews. I'm not picking around, like, good ones or bad ones. These are just the reviews that they have. They're all this horny. Some of them are actually hornier.
Oh, that's insane.
Like,
I can see it, though. I can see
it. No, it was, like, I was just going, like, I was laughing my ass off last night. Like, I was, like, getting really, really tired last night. And I was like, okay, I just have to get through these Letterboxd reviews, and then I'm going to bed. Mm-hmm. And I was just having the time of my life just going through the popular reviews for 2011 Fright Night, because all of them were just, like, so thirsty for Colin Farrell.
Oh, that is...
Like, I almost made a post on Instagram where I was like, so many people are going to horny jail over vampire Colin Farrell. Like, it's so funny.
It's one of those things where when I first started reading this, I'm like, how did the remake get almost as many reviews as the OG? Because that never happens.
All of them were just like thirsting over Colin Farrell.
Oh, I see that now. I see that now.
Or they were really sad about Anton Yelchin. Like, some of them were legitimately like, it's been 2 years. I miss you. And I'm like, I'm not putting that in there. That's a killer. No,
that'll bring us down a little. But again, he was great in it anyway. Yes. So they're both good. They're both good. Mm-hmm. But of course, finally, legitimate review from John Carpenter, not actual name, with 3.5 stars. Quote, rock solid during some moments, painful CGI in others. Casting was fine all around, and I appreciate how the movie pays homage to Tom Holland's original without totally ripping it off. Add this one to the list of remakes that work. Which, okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is the behind the scenes on Fright Night 1985 and Fright Night 2011.
Hell yeah.
Now it's time, Alex. It's time.
Yeah. We're here. We made it.
Yes. What are your thoughts on Fright Night 1985?
Well, so when I watched these, it, like, I don't know, 4 days apart, mm-hmm. Mainly because we kept having to move recording around.
Oh, yeah, it's been a week.
But when I watched 1980, so when I sat down, I was like, I need to find where I can watch these movies. I ended up paying for both of them.
Yeah, me too.
But you're welcome, Tom Holland. But when I was doing that, I watched the trailers for both of them because I was like, I don't know, I was curious, but I didn't want to pay for them yet.
Yeah. I feel you on that one.
So I watched the 1985 one, and the trailer is just like the first like 2 minutes of the movie.
Oh, really?
It's not actually a trailer.
Yeah.
It was after Amy and Charlie like fight and come downstairs, and he's like convinced that the new neighbor's a vampire.
Yeah.
And she's talking about what you don't want to fuck in front of his mom. And I was like, oh my God. New fear unlocked. And then I watched the 2011 one, and the trailer, of course, is super highly stylized in 2011.
Oh, yeah. It's one of those like, this
in
is
a world.
Yeah.
And so
I like how I didn't see the trailer and I kind of felt where you were going with that one for sure.
So it was when I said super stylized. Yeah. Yeah, in 2000. Well, if you think super stylized in 2011 and match those together, it's that. And so I watched that and I was like, oh man, I can't wait to get to the 2011 one. That looks fucking cool. David Tennant's in it. Mm-hmm. Colin Farrell's in it. Anton Yelchin's in it. Toni Collette's in it.
Yeah.
Sick.
Stacked.
Yeah, it's stacked. Dave Franco's in it?
He is in it. That's right.
Like, not for a long time, but he's definitely there.
like pre-21 Jump Street, actually,
yeah,
also.
Yeah, definitely pre-21 Jump Street.
Yeah. But you had to get through the 1985 version in your mind at this point?
Yes. I put up a little bit of a like, okay, well, I guess I'll just do this first, which obviously was not to my detriment. But as I was watching it, I was like, I fucking love this.
Right?
Like, it was so good. Like, it just hits all, like, the 80s horror notes that you're looking for in a monster movie.
Yes,
it's,
I agree.
So good. And, of course, everyone knows I'm a slut for practical effects. Like, it's just so good. But I loved it.
Hey, all right.
Your thoughts.
Oh, okay. This is my first time seeing this movie. I don't know why I've never seen it.
I also wanted to mention that I have not seen 1985. I have not seen 2011.
Dude, for some reason, I kept thinking this was Once Bitten with Jim Carrey. I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, oh, cool. I get to watch the Jim Carrey movie.
Why did you think that?
Vampires.
There's so many vampire movies.
I know. I thought it was just that one because I'd seen that one. I'm like, okay, well, I think I remember
cool,
it was okay.
Jim Carrey,
yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay. This is not it. But I remember being really frustrated at the opening scene because in my mind, I'm like, dude, you guys are boyfriend and girlfriend here. Who cares about the neighbor? Like, get yours, bro. But as the movie progressed past that first scene, which just left me kind of like hating fucking Charlie because I fucking hate Charlie in this movie. But growing up, having watched 80s horror movies like my whole life since I've had memories, you're used to hating the main characters anyways. They just suck.
They're just kind of
you
annoying.
Just always hate
them. That whole opening scene is like, I agree. It's just it's annoying. Yes, it's frustrating. But it's also like, clearly like he wants to fuck and then he's like trying to like pressure her.
Oh, I know. I hated that actually. Like, that's what I hated more.
Yeah, it pressuring her, and then she's just like laying there like a dead fish. Like, okay, I guess we'll do this. And then he's just like, never mind. I'm spying on my neighbor. And it's just like, oh my god, you are giving this poor girl the runaround, and it's not good.
No, it's weird because that's the kind of dichotomy. Because I felt like the opening shot where it was kind of like a slow, like stylistic pan over to the house, and like it was like gothy, and I'm like, holy shit,
yeah,
like this movie's got some fucking style to it. And then that happens, and I'm like, oh, but these characters might not be great. I was wrong for the most part. It's just Charlie. Everyone else is fine.
Yeah, I love Amy's character.
Yeah, she was great.
Yeah.
This movie has style.
Did you know, at the time of filming this, she was 27, Amy?
What?
She's 27 in that.
I mean, I was thinking that she aged up quite a bit to get to fucking Married with Children. Yeah.
I did the math because I was like, why are they making a 17-year-old, like, make out with Chris Sarandon? Mm-hmm. And then part of it was just me being protective, and I was like, I'm doing the math just to make, how old is she in this?
Like, is this a Jessica Alba Idle Hand situation going on?
Yeah, pretty much. And I did the math, and she was 27.
Damn.
I mean, sure, Chris Sarandon was in his 40s, but like,
at the same
who cares?
She's close to 30 at this point. She's all right.
Like, who gives a fuck? But no, I was just like, wow, she looks good.
She did. And honestly, like the movie, it is so well paced. Like, this one is paced, like, just scene after scene makes sense. Yeah. You can tell this is a writer's movie. Mm-hmm. Like, this was a screenplay to screenplay, kind of like Tom Holland had a vision. Stylistically fantastic. Special effects, fucking amazing. Performances across the board, 80s as fuck, but 80s in a good way.
Absolutely.
God, I fucking hate these motorcycle fucks. Yeah. The only character I was kind of whatever about was, like, the Chris Sarandon's character, his bro.
Oh, you mean like, his homoerotic, like, bitch boy?
Yeah, whoever that was.
Billy.
Like, Billy. Yeah, Billy kind of sucked. I didn't really care for Billy.
Because, like, he kind of popped in for like, comedic levity sometimes. Like, there's that scene where where Charlie goes to the cops, which is stupid. Mm-hmm. But then he's just like, oh, yes, do you want to come down to the basement where all the bodies are?
Yeah.
And, apparently, in the script that was originally supposed to be played seriously, it was supposed to be played straight.
Oh, interesting.
And he, I guess him, just he was just like, I'm going to try to play this funny. And it worked.
Yeah, I think that part kind of worked. I think he was just kind of unnecessary. I feel like those could have went to Chris Sarandon, those situations for the most part.
Oh, well, you know, apparently they felt the same in the 2011 remake because they wrote out his character.
Yeah, that's where I think that kind of works. But honestly, like, I'm so glad we watched this one. 85, it's 80s as fuck.
Yeah.
It's got a great cast. It has a fantastic dance scene. Dance / seduction scene.
Yeah,
at the
it
end.
Does. That's holy like, shit.
That's like some The Hunger Bowie shit right there.
Yeah, totally.
Or I'm just like, oh my god, look at these fucking lights, the nightclub, and the way it fucking ends, where it's like he just murks a bodyguard and tosses a body, everybody's screaming.
And just, like, the game involved of walking into an 80s nightclub in a sweater.
Yeah.
And just, like, knowing you're just, like, the shit.
Right?
Just mwah, mwah, mm-hmm. And beautiful.
No, this movie has such 80s iconography sprinkled in, and you wouldn't even know it. You would know it's iconography even if you've never seen it. Like, it's just very, very well made. I really enjoyed it. Again, just the main character kind of blows. Just a little bit.
He's obnoxious and like he keeps like... In horror movies, it's kind of fun to see the main character make all the wrong decisions. Yeah. But it's kind of annoying when one character is making all the wrong decisions while his like friends are trying to help.
Yes.
And like trying to help him like not go down a path of madness.
Mm-hmm. Right.
that is bordering on frustrating.
Exactly. I mean, his level of doofusness is not comparable to any of the other characters. And there's a disparity there, but at the same time, he does play 17 spot on.
Yeah.
Like spot on. This is how a kid would react.
Yeah. Absolutely. You're 17 and, stupid.
Yeah. 17 and dumb. But
which will come up in a later question that I have.
Oh, fun. Now, 2011. Mm-hmm. Where's the disparity there, huh? You wanted to watch it? Fucking trailer.
I did. And when the time came for me to watch it, it couldn't hold my attention.
No?
Like, it did eventually.
Yeah.
But it took a minute. It mm-hmm. took a little bit, like, even though I would, one of the things I will say, both for 1985 and for 2011, they get into, like, the crux of the issue almost immediately.
Yeah, they don't waste your time.
No, because, like, and I thought that was going to be it, right? Like, I thought it was going to be, like, the teenager being like, oh, I think he's a vampire, and then collecting evidence, and then, like, basically what happens in the first 20 minutes, I was expecting that to happen, like, 45 minutes, like an hour into the movie, and then
climax.
And then the climax happens. Mm-hmm. But it happens like right in the beginning, and it turns out like the drama is just the repercussions of making waves in the very beginning.
Like, oh, great, now you know, and now there's nothing you can do about
it. I really, really like that in terms of conflict. Like, mm-hmm. I was not expecting that. That was really refreshing. And they did the same thing in 2011, where McLovin, I'm just going to call him McLovin.
I know.
It's so bad. He's
He's more than that, but
he's
he really
more
is,
than
yeah,
that, but it's just what he's known as. But fucking McLovin. Mm-hmm. He's the one who's just like, Evil Ed, I guess. He gets turned super, super quick, or like early on in the movie.
Yes.
Which again doesn't happen until a little bit later in 1985, which I also thought was well done.
Mm-hmm.
But just like that, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? Basically, I just like the conflict that it's introduced so early.
Yes, exactly. No, I agree.
So my thoughts overall for 2011, it's a little bit slow for me, or it's a little bit hard to grab my attention. But once it did, I would say about 35, 40 minutes in.
Yeah, so just eliminate the first act.
The whole first act.
Yeah.
I will say both of these are a solid hour and a half, hour 45. Like, they're cool, easy movies, mm-hmm. Which I do appreciate. I'm like hooked. I was super into it. Like, I kept pausing it for the 2011 one because I kept being distracted. Mm-hmm. That probably is more of a me issue than the movie itself.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy it. I think there was some of like the soul of 1985 mm-hmm. that was kind of lost in translation to the 2011 one. I think, like, for example,
yes,
like the dance scene in 1985.
Yeah.
I thought that was like super well done, like really intense, like intimate, like really, really good, really well done. In 2011, I think they were relying too much on Colin Farrell being hot.
Yeah, they definitely did.
Like, you know, because like, and then in 1985, like, it was really intense and much more like Hunger, like the Hunger.
Yeah, a little more artsy.
Artsy. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, in 2011, they're like, he's hot. He's an old wife beater. Look at his arms. Like, that was just like, I was like, okay.
See, that's so interesting because I thought they both actually did a good job, but 1985 is clearly superior. But,
okay.
But I thought, like, in my mind, 2011, there's no way they could have done it.
Okay, to be fair, I feel like I am talking an unnecessary amount of shit on 2011. I did like it.
Yeah.
I just want to be clear. I did enjoy it. It was enjoyable. It's, like, much more upbeat. It's a lot more action-y. It's definitely... The CGI gore, like, didn't really do a lot for me, but it was really bloody.
Yes.
Even though it's very obviously fake, but still enjoyable. But, mm-hmm. I liked it. I just don't want to make it sound like I'm, like, totally talking shit.
I liked them both.
Yes. I liked 1985 more, but, yes, I did. I also liked 2011.
Oh, interesting. Now, for me, I feel like I've seen so many of these remakes, and they're mm-hmm. always so, like, so not as good as the first one. It's almost insulting. The fact that this one was pretty comparable to me, I was like, I'm impressed. I was pretty impressed, to be honest with you.
Because the bar is in hell.
That's a good point, but the bar has been in hell for decades. I've had decades to establish where that bar would be. And this one surprised the shit out of me, because honestly, the casting, down to Toni Collette being a much better mother, I think, in this movie than the other one.
The mom is barely in the first movie, though.
Yeah, she's there to quip and, like, provide kind of, like, her and Charlie are both obnoxious to me, honestly. Like,
The
whole Brewster family, just not great. And in this one, I was so much more on Anton Yelchin's side with Toni Collette's side. Like, yes. It's like night and day.
I do agree with that. Anton Yelchin definitely has more of the, like, I just am trying to figure out my way. Like, I'm just like an angsty teenager. Like, I understand that.
And he had like that. He was kind of being more of a cool guy, just surprisingly, but he had a nerd friend. And like, there's a different dynamic there.
It's that dynamic when, like, you have your brush with popularity in high school. I can't speak to this because I never had this. Mm-hmm. But like, it's that trope where it's like you have a brush with popularity, so you pretend you don't know your actual friends.
Yes. Even,
you know, and it's just like this whole thing. And
Yeah, no, it's interesting because that's exactly right. And the trope works within the context of this story very well.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't obviously get that with the last one. Although I think the Evil Ed and Charlie had a very good camaraderie for most of the movie in the 85 compared to this one.
Really?
Well, I mean,
I thought they hated each other. I mean, they just seemed to like not they didn't seem to be like good friends. Like, they just seemed to kind of bicker a lot.
I feel like that was part of the friendship, though. They knew each other so well. They're like, yeah, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
Doing pranks on each other and that shit.
All right.
They were like dudes, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah. And in this one, they're more like, it's not the same, but I'm glad it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very glad it wasn't.
Yeah.
Colin Farrell, I think, did fantastic in this role.
Yeah.
He just, again, plays he plays menacing really, really well.
He does.
Yeah. And the CG, I didn't mind it only because it looks like everything else in this era. Like, it is the look. It's just the slickness of the era. And despite it not being nearly as good as the practical effects that are, the movie itself, I think, it has a good look to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it fits within that vibe. It was different enough to me that this really was its own thing while still being Fright Night. In my limited knowledge of just knowing what Fright Night is within 2 days prior.
The last couple of days of Fright Night.
Yeah, I didn't have decades of, like, fanboying to kind of, you know, mess with the opinion.
If anyone has, like, been, like, obsessed with Fright Night since their youth and has any commentary, please let us know.
Yeah, let us know, because as noobs, I'm like, no, they're both their own thing. And they both represent, I think, their eras very well. And honestly, if you're going to remake and blah, 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 you do it like this.
I can see 2011 not meeting the expectations of someone who's been, like, in love with Fright Night.
Yeah, burnt the VHS and shit as a kid.
Exactly. Like, I can see that, but I think that's more, again, it's like the infamous nostalgia goggles,
mm-hmm.
you know, I talk about all the time. Like, I think that probably has a lot more to do with it, because in terms of a remake, it is not a bad one.
But also,
the bar is in hell, so.
Exactly. But yeah, I kind of wish I would have saw this in theaters, and I wish I would have saw Fright Night in VHS as a kid.
Yeah.
The OG.
It was part of your repertoire growing up.
Right, part of the rotation, but it wasn't there. Ay, ay, ay.
So, okay, question. Do you have any interest in covering, because both of these movies have sequels, like direct to VHS or direct to DVD or direct to streaming sequels. Do you have any interest in covering any of them?
No, not really.
The 2011 sequel has none of the original cast.
I heard it's essentially a remake.
It is a re-remake, even mm-hmm. though it's called Fright Night 2, which makes no sense, which is part of the reason why I'm like, you couldn't pay me to watch it.
Nope.
And then for the 1985 remake, only two of the original cast members return because most of them are busy. I think at this point, the actress who plays Amy is on Married with Children at this point. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was Charlie and Roddy McDowell, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, I mean, maybe two, but I wouldn't put a whole episode on it, honestly. Like, it just doesn't seem worth it.
No.
There's no way they could even compare. Like, it's like me when trying to cover The Omen 4 or The Omen 3. I'm torn. I want to cover 3 just because it makes sense, but, like, 4 for its own episode, I'll include as a detail in the other one.
It's a footnote.
It's a footnote, yeah. And they both seem like footnotes, especially considering that I feel like Fright Night is kind of a pop culture-y kind of...
Sure.
You know, it has its presence for a generation of people. Mm-hmm. The sequel clearly doesn't have that because nobody really talks about it. So, yeah.
No, that makes sense.
Meh.
Yeah. Shrug. Okay, we kind of talked about this. I'm going to get on my soapbox.
Do it.
The special effects of 1985 versus 2011. The 2011 special effects drove me up the fucking wall.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they did.
They were invisible to me.
What?
Like,
what do you mean they were invisible to you?
They just felt like any other movie.
My God.
They weren't special. They weren't mad. They were just there.
They were dog shit. You fucking kidding me? There's like a there's the scene after the car accident where Jerry Dandridge's face just does the evil vampire face thing, and it's basically just CGI superimposed. We're gonna put someone else's evil face over your face, Colin Farrell, and I was like, what the fuck is that? What have they done? Like, I understand, and it's that quote, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
It's supposed to pop out in 3D, Alex.
I don't give a fuck. Like, just because we had the technology to do it does not mean every fucking thing, every single blood geyser needed to be in, like, in your face, 3D. Like, it was excessive.
But how are you supposed to make those ticket sales if it's not going at the screen?
Well, it turned out they didn't make very many because it only made $41 million.
Oh, but they should have done more. I'm joking.
Yeah, no, I know you're joking.
They should not have done more. No.
No, it was just like excessive. There's also like just the traditional the 3D stuff where it was just like, we're just gonna throw stuff and make it look like it's flying at your face.
Oh, we broke the window. Look at it. Look around the camera.
Look, glass shards. Like, or the scene where Jerry Dandridge throws a motorcycle an unreasonable distance. And you know, it looks like you're getting hit by a motorcycle. Like that kind of stuff. Like it's just
it's goofy.
I don't like 3D. I've never been a fan. I can't see in 3D. I think I might just be bitter because I can't. Like, I don't know. It just never really did anything for me because it never really felt like it was enriching my movie watching experience.
Yeah, that's a good point. I agree.
But that's my thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I know this is just because I love practical effects. Like, I know that.
I mean, and you, I know you really love 1985's practical effects. Compared to a lot of practical effects we've seen, how would you like gauge that?
Honestly, I thought it was spectacular. Like, especially, like, obviously it's not, like, you know, amazing, but I thought it was really, really good an 80s horror film with a minimal budget.
Yeah, I agree.
There's a scene where Evil Ed is a werewolf, and then he's turning from a werewolf into a person, and, like, it's
that
grotesque.
Was good, yeah.
It's fucking grotesque.
Or even fucking Jerry's death.
Yeah.
Jerry's, like, holy shit. Yeah. That's some fire.
Or the scene where Amy, like, her big reveal, which is on the cover of Fright Night, where, you know, her vampire form, it's disgusting.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful.
Right?
And I love it.
With the fake boobies.
Yeah, that, right? It's like, oh, you're a vampire. You have titties now.
You're a vampire. We have titties now. I love it. That should be the opening.
Right? Your vampire transformation comes with a breast augmentation.
I gotta turn back into a human sometimes? Oh, bullshit.
Fine, you can keep the titties. Yay! I just think the practical effects was... I thought that was really, really well done.
Yeah.
Especially... In comparison to some of the other 80s movies that we've covered, I think this is... not quite the thing, but a little bit below.
Yeah, see? You can definitely tell the Ghostbusters team worked on this and knew their shit.
Yeah.
Because these effects look better than anything in any Friday the 13th movie I've seen.
That's what
80s.
I was just thinking Friday the 13th too. Yeah.
Like, those looked like fucking garbage compared to this shit. It's not even close. And the fact that the 1985, like, on a special effects front looks so good, it does hinder the 2011 a little bit.
Like, and it holds up.
It
like
really
you,
holds
like
up.
You can watch and sure the fashion, the music, that's gonna date it a smidgen.
But like in a fun way.
You're like, but in a fun way, right? Of course, in a fun way. We love the 80s. But the special effects hold up remarkably well. Mm-hmm. Like, you could take those special effects, put it in something that's come out in the last 10 years, and it would totally hold up, in my opinion.
No, I agree. It really stands on its own. It's a good example of how to do it within its era.
Yeah.
And I think, again, that's where 2011 kind of suffers a little bit, because to me, I can excuse kind of the poor CGI, whatever it is, only because it doesn't take itself very seriously as a movie anyways. So
it's true. David Tennant, Chris Angel, was really funny.
I don't mind it at that point. If it was maybe a little more gruesome, it wouldn't maybe not be as fun. Maybe not. I don't know. Like, it's kind of hard to say.
Like, it's fake gruesome. Like, it's like gore I would show like a 13-year-old and be like, okay, you're like this horror movie, enjoy it. But it's not like I'm going to show a 13-year-old the Poughkeepsie tapes, you know what I mean?
Exactly. But again, it casualizes it for me a little more, which I think works within the tone of the movie. It works within the tone.
That, I understand that. I think it's just because 85 is a little bit more serious.
It's a little more threatening in a way that's
threatening.
I would say that 2011 isn't. With the exception of when Colin Farrell, like, obviously goes full on, like, motherfucker.
Yeah.
But, like, that's a small portion of the movie, really.
It's relatively short. And even then, it's more just, like, him being a villain than, like, actual true threatening, menacing, like, villain, you know?
Yeah, because Chris Sarandon was still pretty menacing when he wanted to be. Like, agreed. He really was.
No.
He
was also, like, psychological. He was like, oh, I know that you know what I am, so I'm going to fuck your mom.
Now that I've been invited in, you'll probably see a lot more of me. And I'm like, holy shit.
You're playing the mind game.
He is, yeah.
And it was also just like that little, you know, just like, I'm definitely going to try to fuck your mom. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh!
Oh, I'm going to fuck your girlfriend, too. Charlie, yeah?
How do you like that?
Did you want to look out the... You should have looked out the window, bro. Should have looked out the fucking window.
And that's why he's so menacing. He's just like... You got too nosy, so now I'm going to ruin your fucking life.
It's like, and I'm not going to convert you either. You're going to have to humanly live with me fucking with everything that is important to you.
God. That's why he's such a good villain.
Yeah.
Speaking of Jerry Danbridge, which one did you like more?
Fucking hard to say, to be honest with you. I did, as we were talking about this right now, but there are some things Colin Farrell, like, he's like perfect for that role. It's fucking weird.
All right.
But I still give the edge to Chris Sarandon because of just how we discussed this right now. At the end of the day, he's a little more grounded and he's a little more of like, he will fuck with Charlie. He will. Maybe the Colin Farrell, I liked him at a comparable level just because he was fucking with Anton Yelchin, who I was so rooting for the whole fucking movie compared to the other guy.
Okay.
So there was a lot more felt at stake in on that front, where I didn't really care about Charlie as much in 85. I cared more about his family, you know, everybody around him.
Sure.
So, but performance-wise, they're comparable. I'm going to give the edge to Chris Sarandon for sure.
Me too.
Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. But it is a close, it's close for all the reasons that you said. It's not to the detriment of Colin Farrell. I think he did a fantastic job. He's actually one of the highlights of the 2011 version for me.
Oh, I would say for sure. Yeah. He has the perfect look for that character. I don't know what it is.
I mean, he has the brooding vampire next door kind of look where it's, and then definitely like, oh, I'm going to fuck your mom and your girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. And again, if either Colin Farrell or Chris Sarandon in 1985 were to put me in that scenario, I'm like, oh, fuck, dude. I have no chance. I have no chance here to stop this from happening.
So, okay, well, that was an easy question.
Yeah, that was easy.
So, okay, follow up to that. Which one would you rather face off against?
Fuck, I have no idea. I have no idea.
The
okay.
psychological warfare of Chris Sarandon, or just the pure fucking man strength of Colin Farrell?
Well, I feel like I'm smarter than 1985, Charlie. So maybe I can stand up a little more, but he's still going to find a way to get me.
Sure.
Colin Farrell, just, he's a goddamn beast. There's no way. There's no fucking way. I'm going to go ahead and say Sarandon, but it's not an easy pick. It's not an easy pick. I just think I'm a little better than dumbass 85 Charlie. Just a little bit.
Hmm.
And Colin Farrell, I think, especially in the context of now... Yeah, he's gonna fuck my mom and girlfriend. He's gonna do it. There's no way around that. I'm just like, yeah, that's fucking A. That's Colin Farrell, dude. Just don't tell me about it. I don't gotta know.
I just don't know.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I don't remember your teeth being that big. You wanna watch Netflix or something? Like, how about you?
Colin Farrell in a heartbeat.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You'd rather face up? Why? What? What?
Because I don't deal with psychological warfare well, I would just go nuts and crumble. And then for Colin Farrell, at least I feel like I would I would have a chance to outwit him, because I don't think I'm smarter than Chris Sarandon, but I know for a fact I'm probably smarter than the himbo.
Like, but see, like, I feel like the...
Also, I feel like if anyone is... If I would want either of them to turn me into a vampire, it'd be Colin Farrell, so...
That's a good point. That makes sense. I don't know. I feel like there's an unhinged nature to Colin Farrell that's a little more random. I don't think... Chris Sarandon is a lot more calculated, which does... It's scary in its own way, but maybe you can anticipate calculated
sometimes. But here's the thing. Is it also... Jerry Danbridge, like, lore-wise, in 2011, he wants to make more vampires. If I want to be a vampire, I'm going to him.
Yeah, you're on the winning squad at that point.
I'm going to him versus Chris Sarandon. The only reason he turned Amy is because she's the reincarnated, version of an ex-lover.
Oh, that's a good point.
Like, he was never going to just turn a random person. Yeah. He was just trying to live his life. And the only reason he got involved is because Charlie's fucking nosy.
See? I'm not that nosy. I think for the first half hour, I'd be fine because I would want to have sex with my girlfriend. Like, that's why. I would be okay.
Absolutely.
I would be okay on that front.
Are they carrying a coffin? Oh, well. Close his blind.
Yeah. That's great. That's how it would work out.
No, I totally agree.
Colin Farrell would be like, oh man, everybody's just staying out at night a whole bunch nowadays. I wonder what they're doing. Boy, I'm sleepy. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's how I would survive.
No, I agree. Yeah. Okay, so another 1985 versus 2011 question. Which Charlie, Amy, and Evil Ed trio do you prefer?
Oh my God, 2011, but with a heartbeat. With a heartbeat. I mean, I like 85 Amy, but I
do too. I really like 85 Amy.
I think she's great. I really don't like Charlie 85, and I don't really care for Evil Ed 85 mm-hmm. either. I think in terms of a consistent trio, give me some Anton Yelchin, give me some McLovin, give me some fucking, what's her name, Poots?
Yeah, Emigan Poots.
Emigan Poots. Yeah.
I agree, 2011. Mm-hmm. I really like their, even though they didn't have, like, necessarily a dynamic, like, you don't really see the three of them together being, like, you know, like a group or, like, a trio.
No.
In the 85 version, they're definitely, like, a more established, like, kind of, like, friend group.
Yeah, they seem like friends, just bickering and all that shit. Yeah.
But yeah, 2011, I think.
2011, for sure. No, I agree.
Okay. Fun question time. You find yourself a virginal teen once more. Dun, dun, dun. Ah!
Yeah.
And your neighbor is definitely a vampire. What are you doing?
Okay, so if it's Virgin Anthony, I am playing Nintendo 64 games on my GameCube. And I'm also... Fuck. Okay, so I know they're a vampire.
They're definitely a vampire. Like, you've seen the signs. You're just like, you looked out, like, basically, like, all but, like, they showed up outside your window being like, I want to suck your blood.
Yeah, see, but at the time, I had Ocarina of Time and the Master Quest on one disc that I got from pre-ordering Wind Waker at GameStop, and that would just occupy my time. And so I probably wouldn't care as much.
I wonder why you were a virgin.
I know. no, honestly, though... when I think about my nervous virgin energy from back in the day, I would speculate and I would go on forums and be like, hey, what do I do if my neighbor's a vampire? And like be typing and shit. Energy. Yeah, my nervous virgin energy from like teenage Anthony.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. There's no action happening. Like, I'm not making moves on women. I'm definitely not making moves on a vampire that would kill me. Like, that's just how that's going to work. No, So I just continue to jerk off and hope I don't get bit. That's me.
That's so...
And play GameCube.
Okay, sure. Yeah,
play GameCube.
Well,
vampire game, maybe. See?
So, okay, yeah.
Yeah, how does that work, Alex?
what would I do? Mm-hmm. Virgin
fucking bite me!
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm so aggressive now. Imagine how aggressive I was as a virginal teenager. Jesus Christ. No, I would be pretty much similar thing as you, only instead of on a forum, I would be on Tumblr being like, this is happening. What should I do? Question mark.
Oh, you become part of a community?
No, and then everyone, because I had a followership on Tumblr back in the day, and it probably would have turned into a horrible advice along the lines of go fuck the vampire.
Yeah. I would love to have my first time with the vampire.
Yeah, like,
I guess I can tell you guys about it afterwards.
Truly, I would be terrified and hide because that's mostly how I am now. Yeah, I think I would set up little tiny like things to confirm what I think.
Yeah.
Because I generally don't believe myself anyway. So I would probably set up like a little bowl of like holy water and like tip it over one day just to see what happens, or I don't know, set up little tiny things that like could be an accident just to kind of see what happens, and then once it's like confirmed, I would just leave them alone.
Oh, interesting. See, I feel like I'd get the signs very obviously in my face and be like, well, gonna ignore that. Okay, let's just keep going.
Yeah, I think both of us are just like, yeah, I'm just gonna leave that alone. I'm not going to shake that bush.
And I definitely wouldn't be able to use the cross at that point because teenage edgelord me was just not a man of God.
Yeah, little edgelord atheist Anthony Fuentes.
Playing video games all fucking day, just, you know what? Not getting laid.
My computer was wedged between two windows where I could definitely see my neighbor. So if that neighbor was a vampire, I feel like it definitely would have been just like a day 473. Yeah. Like, I would have just kept a blog documenting my vampire neighbor's activities. Maybe I would have eventually befriended the vampire. I don't know. But also, I didn't go out a lot at night.
See?
So.
Wow.
I think we just both would have been losers about the whole situation.
I think so, too. You know? Probably.
I don't know what that question would have elicited, because we're both kind of losers now.
No, we're great now.
And we're very cool now. We're nerds.
Nerds are in. They were not in 2000, whenever, when I went to high school.
Yeah, and, well, when I was in high school, they were on their way up, for sure. But yeah. I was more of a dork than a nerd.
Yeah, no, we would not have... I don't know. We would have lived, for sure. I think we'd have been all right.
I think we would have been fine. Lived. Yeah, definitely. Okay, Kill of the Film, 1985 versus 2011.
Okay, well, fucking Jerry getting taken out at the end was my Kill of the Film for the OG, for sure. Like, that one was good. With his face melting and the, you
agreed.
Know.
Agreed. No, I'm just thinking back.
Harryhausen special effects, I think you just can't, that's hard to top, honestly. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there were a lot of good ones. 2011... I don't really remember a lot of the kills, to be honest with you.
McLovin.
Like, how did he die? I can't remember.
He's, like, basically, he got, like, hacked up it was just that big fight with all, like, the medieval weapons and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And then he had to, like, and then Anton Yelchin had to stake him, and it was sad because he's like, I don't want to kill my best friend, but then
that's
he did,
right.
And then he's like, it's okay, Brewster.
Yeah.
And then he falls, and...
Oh, you know what? I'm with you on that one, too. Okay.
Oh, we're in agreement. That was great. Good.
Yeah.
Go team.
Go team. We did it. Woo.
Woo. Okay. Last question. Rate these films respectively, first off, in order, which ones you prefer. So which one wins?
Yes.
And then rate them each out of 5 stakes to the heart.
Okay. 85 wins.
Okay.
85 wins. 85 is, fuck. That was good, dude. I'm going to say 4.5. Like, that's up there for me. I was really surprised by this one. And then, 2011? Fuck. 3.9.
So random, but okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because I don't think it's 4.
It's
I
not.
I don't think it's 4. But I think it's a really good 3. It's like a really good 3 something.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, I'll take it. Especially, I'm impressed by the remake. So.
Right. I'm giving 1985 a 4.
Okay.
I'm giving 2011 a
3. Okay.
1985
I like it.
Wins, obviously.
Yes.
I'm a huge fan. Well, actually, no, I'm going to give 1985 a 4.25.
4.25, I can respect that.
Yeah.
I feel it's above a standard 4, I really do.
It's not quite a standard 4, like, because I know I've definitely given some 4s to movies that I did not like as much as I like this.
Exactly.
Like, I feel like I'm definitely, Fright Night, I feel like is going to be an October staple for me now.
I think it would be such a good Halloween movie.
Yeah.
Such a good Halloween movie. And that we just discovered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So. And again, respectable remake. Absolutely respectable. Yeah.
Totally.
Not even a 2. No. It's in the 3s
for sure.
I think
it's definitely worth your time, especially if you absolutely loved 1985's Fright Night and you want like more from like the story, or if you just like, yeah.
Or you want some hard 2010s energy. It's got that.
It does.
Spades.
Yeah.
In
or if you just
spades.
Really, really like Colin Farrell, just do yourself a favor.
And our boy Anton Yelchin, who's just the G, dude.
It's
I fucking
true.
Love that guy.
So good. So I think that's it.
That's it. Two movies.
We did it. Oh my God. These episodes where we do two movies are such a marathon. So that was Fright Night from 1985 and 2011. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. The fun is just beginning for February. Next week, what are we covering? Give us a hint, Anthony Fuentes.
It's ghost time next week. It's ghost time next week. And I'm gonna tell you right now, it's a nostalgia pick for me. It's definitely got that 90s energy for
I've never seen it. Everyone has told me I need to and that it's like iconic and I'm very excited to watch it because has one of my favorites in it. Well,
The cast is amazing in this movie. I thought it was going to be kind of lame because in my mind I'm like, well, I liked it as a kid, but you know, obviously it's dated and blah, blah, blah. It didn't get good reviews. All this shit. Fucking banger.
fucking banger.
There's a lot of ghosts in this one. There's a lot of ghosts in this one. Actually, a very specific number. And that is your hint. All right.
Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. If you like what you heard, please, please, please write a review on iTunes if you're listening there and subscribe. You can also leave a 5-star review on Spotify and then subscribe wherever you are listening on all of your podcast platforms. And then if you feel like we deserve a couple bucks for what we are doing, we do have a Patreon. We are at patreon.com/horrorpeoplepod. We have tiers as low as $5 a month, and that gets you a sticker and on top of other cool content that we put out. So check that out. We're waiting to get some more patrons before we put out some content, but we have some fantastic tiers with a ton of content, including commentary tracks, more Theory Corner stuff, an extra pre-show, all that stuff. So super cool. Check it out. And then if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE People's Podcast. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler.
Yeah.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. So feel free to hit us up there if you have any thoughts about Fright Night, either 1985 or 2011, or if we missed something tremendous, please let us know.
Yeah.
especially if you're super nostalgic about 1985. It seems like some people are. So I would love to hear from you. On that note, if you think your neighbor is a vampire, just go fuck your girlfriend.
Yes, I agree. Always fuck your girlfriend.
Bye, guys.
See ya.